Chapter 71. The journey in despair. Penny was too ill through the rest of that day for any questions to be addressed to her, too ill even to think with any distinctness of the evils that were to come. She only felt that all her hope was crushed, and that instead of having found a refuge, she had only reached the borders of a new wilderness, where no goal lay before her. The sensations of bodily sickness, in a comfortable bed, and with the tendance of the good-natured landlady, made a sort of respite for her, such a respite as there is in the faint weariness which obliges a man to throw himself on the sand instead of toiling onward under the scorching sun. But when sleep and rest had brought back the strength necessary for the keenness of mental suffering, when she lay the next morning looking at the growing light, which was like a cruel taskmaster returning to urge from her a fresh round of hated hopeless labor, she began to think what course she must take, to remember that all her money was gone, to look at the prospect of further wandering among strangers with the new clearness shed on it by the experience of her journey to Windsor. But which way could she turn? It was impossible for her to enter into any service, even if she could obtain it. There was nothing but immediate beggary before her. She thought of a young woman who had been found against the church wall at Hayslip one Sunday, nearly dead with cold and hunger, a tiny infant in her arms. The woman was rescued and taken to the parish. He perish. You can perhaps hardly understand the effect of that word on a mind like Hetty's, brought up among people who were somewhat hard in their feelings even towards poverty, who lived among the fields, and had little pity for want and rags as a cruel inevitable fate such as they sometimes seem in cities, but held them a mark of idleness and vice, and it was idleness and vice that brought burdens on the parish. To Hetty the parish was next to the prison in obloquy, and to ask anything of strangers, to beg, lay in the same far-off hideous region of intolerable shame that Hetty had all her life thought it impossible she could ever come near. But now the remembrance of that wretched woman whom she had seen herself, on her way from church, being carried into Joshua Rann's, came back upon her with the new terrible sense that there was very little now to divide her from the same lot. And the dread of bodily hardship mingled with the dread of shame, for Hetty had the luxurious nature of a round, soft-coated pet animal. How she yearned to be back in her safe home again, cherished and cared for as she had always been. Her aunt's scolding about trifles would have been music to her ears now. She longed for it. She used to hear it in a time when she had only trifles to hide. Could she be the same Hetty that used to make up the butter in the dairy with the guelder roses peeping in at the window, she, a runaway whom her friends would not open their doors to again, lying in this strange bed, with the knowledge that she had no money to pay for what she received, and must offer those strangers some of the clothes in her basket? It was then she thought of her locket and earrings, and seeing her pocket lie near, she reached it and spread the contents on the bed before her. There were the locket and earrings in the little velvet-lined boxes, and with them there was a beautiful silver thimble which Adam had bought her, the words "Ememer me" making the ornament of the border, a steel purse, with her 1 shilling in it, and a small red leather case, fastening with a strap. Those beautiful little earrings, with their delicate pearls and garnet, that she had tried in her ears with such longing in the bright sunshine on the 30th of July. She had no longing to put them in her ears now. Her head with its dark rings of hair lay back languidly on the pillow, and the sadness that rested about her brow and eyes was something too hard for regretful memory. Yet she put her hands up to her ears. It was because there were some thin gold rings in them, which were also worth a little money. Yes, she could surely get some money for her ornaments. Those Arthur had given her must have cost a great deal of money. The landlord and landlady had been good to her. Perhaps they would help her to get the money for these things. But this money would not keep her long. What should she do when it was gone? Where should she go? The horrible thought of want and beggary drove her once to think she would go back to her uncle and aunt, and ask them to forgive her, and have pity on her. But she shrank from that idea again, as she might have shrunk from scorching metal. She could never endure that shame before her uncle and aunt, before Mary Birch, and the servants at the Chase, and the people at Broxton, and everybody who knew her. They should never know what had happened to her. What could she do? She would go away from Windsor, travel again as he had done the last week, and get among the flat green fields with the high hedges round them, where nobody could see her or know her. And there, perhaps, when there was nothing else she could do, she should get courage to drown herself in some pond like that in the Scandlands. Yes, she would get away from Windsor as soon as possible. She didn't like these people at the inn to know about her, to know that he had come to look for Captain Donathan. She must think of some reason to tell them why he had asked for him. With this thought, she began to put the things back into her pocket, meaning to get up and dress before the landlady came to her. She had her hand on the red leather case, when it occurred to her that there might be something in this case which she had forgotten, something worth selling, for without knowing what she should do with her life, she craved the means of living as long as possible. And when we desire eagerly to find something, we are apt to search for it in hopeless places. No, there was nothing but common needles and pins, and dried tulip petals between the paper leaves, where she had written down her little money accounts. But on one of these leaves there was a name, which, often as she had seen it before, now flashed on Eddie's mind like a newly discovered message. The name was Dinah Morris, Snowfield. There was a text above it, written, as well as the name, by Dinah's own hand with a little pencil, one evening that they were sitting together, and Hetty happened to have the red case lying open before her. Hetty did not read the text now. She was only arrested by the name. Now, for the first time, she remembered without indifference the affectionate kindness Dinah had shown her, and those words of Dinah in the bedchamber that Hetty must think of her as a friend in trouble. Suppose she were to go to Dinah and ask her to help her? Dinah did not think about things as other people did. She was a mystery to Hetty, but Hetty knew she was always kind. She couldn't imagine Dinah's face turning away from her in dark reproof or scorn, Dinah's voice willingly speaking ill of her, or rejoicing in her misery as a punishment. Dinah did not seem to belong to that world of Hetty's, whose glance she dreaded like scorching fire. But even to her, Hetty shrank from beseeching and confession. She could not prevail on herself to say, "I will go to Dinah." She only thought of that as a possible alternative, if she had not courage for death. The good landlady was amazed when she saw Hetty come downstairs soon after herself, neatly dressed, and looking resolutely self-possessed. Hetty told her she was quite well this morning. She had only been very tired and overcome with her journey, for she had come a long way to ask about her brother, who had run away, and they thought he was gone for a soldier, and Captain Donathan might know, for he had been very kind to her brother once. It was a lame story, and the landlady looked doubtfully at Hetty as she told it, but there was a resolute air of self-reliance about her this morning, so different from the helpless prostration of yesterday, that the landlady hardly knew how to make a remark that might seem like prying into other people's affairs. She only invited her to sit down to breakfast with them, and in the course of it Hetty brought out her earrings and locket, and asked the landlord if he could help her to get money for them. Her journey, she said, had cost her much more than she expected, and now she had no money to get back to her friends, which she wanted to do at once. It was not the first time the landlady had seen the ornaments, for she had examined the contents of Hetty's pocket yesterday, and she and her husband had discussed the fact of a country girl having these beautiful things, with a stronger conviction than ever that Hetty had been miserably deluded by the fine young officer. "Well," said the landlord, when Hetty had spread the precious trifles before him, "we might take 'em to the jeweler's shop, for there's one not far off. But Lord bless you, they wouldn't give you a quarter o' what the things are worth. And you wouldn't like to part with 'em?" he added, looking at her inquiringly. "Oh, I don't mind," said Hetty, hastily, "so as I can get money to go back. and they might think the things were stolen, as he wanted to sell them, he went on, for it isn't usual for a young woman like you to have fine jewelry like that. The blood rushed to Eddie's face with anger. Belong to respectable folks, she said. I'm not a thief. No, but you aren't, I'll be bound, said the landlady. And you'd no call to say that, looking indignantly at her husband. The things were Jev to her. That's plain enough to be seen. I didn't mean as I thought so, said the husband, apologetically, but I said it was what the jeweler might think, and so he wouldn't be offering much money for them. Well, said the wife, suppose you were to advance some money on the things yourself, and then if she liked to redeem them when she got home, she could. But if we heard nothing from her after 2 months, we might do as we liked with them. I will not say that in this accommodating proposition the landlady had no regard, whatever, to the possible reward of her good nature in the ultimate possession of the locket and earrings. Indeed, the effect they would have in that case on the mind of the grocer's wife had presented itself with remarkable vividness to her rapid imagination. The landlord took up the ornaments and pushed out his lips, in a meditative manner. He wished Eddie well, doubtless. But pray, how many of your well-wishers would decline to make a little gain out of you? Your landlady is sincerely affected at parting with you, respects you highly, and will really rejoice if anyone else is generous to you. But at the same time she hands you a bill by which she gains as high a percentage as possible. How much money do you want to get home with, young woman? Said the well-wisher, at length. 3 guineas, answered Eddie, fixing on the sum she set out with, for want of any other standard, and afraid of asking too much. Well, I've no objections to advance you 3 guineas, said the landlord, and if you like to send it me back, and get the jewelry again, you can, you know. The green man isn't going to run away. Oh yes, I'll be very glad, if you'll give me that, said Eddie, relieved at the thought that she would not have to go to the jeweler's, and be stared at and questioned. But if you want the things again, you'll write before long, said the landlady, because when 2 months are up, we shall make up our minds as you don't want them. Yes, said Eddie indifferently. The husband and wife were equally content with this arrangement. The husband thought, if the ornaments were not redeemed, he could make a good thing of it, by taking them to London and selling them. The wife thought she would coax the good man into letting her keep them. And they were accommodating Eddie, poor thing, a pretty respectable-looking young woman, apparently in a sad case. They declined to take anything for her food and bed. She was quite welcome. And at 11 o'clock Eddie said goodbye to them with the same quiet, resolute air as he had worn all the morning, mounting the coach that was to take her 20 miles back along the way as he had come. There is a strength of self-possession which is the sign that the last hope has departed. Despair no more leans on others than perfect contentment, and in despair pride ceases to be counteracted by the sense of dependence. Eddie felt that no one could deliver her from the evils that would make life hateful to her, and no one, she said to herself, should ever know her misery and humiliation. No, she would not confess even to Dinah. She would wander out of sight, and drown herself where her body would never be found, and no one should know what had become of her. When she got off this coach, she began to walk again, and take cheap rides in carts, and get cheap meals, going on and on without distinct purpose, yet strangely, by some fascination, taking the way as he had come, though she was determined not to go back to her own country. Perhaps it was because as he had fixed her mind on the grassy Warwickshire fields, with the bushy tree-studded hedgerows that made a hiding place even in this leafless season. She went more slowly than she came, often getting over the stiles and sitting for hours under the hedgerows, looking before her with blank, beautiful eyes, fancying herself at the edge of a hidden pool, low down, like that in the Scandlands, wondering if it were very painful to be drowned, and if there would be anything worse after death than what she dreaded in life. Religious doctrines had taken no hold on Eddie's mind. She was one of those numerous people who have had godfathers and godmothers, learned their catechism, been confirmed, and gone to church every Sunday, and yet, for any practical result of strength in life, or trust in death, have never appropriated a single Christian idea or Christian feeling. You would misunderstand her thoughts during these wretched days if you imagined that they were influenced either by religious fears or religious hopes. She chose to go to Stratford-on-Avon again, whereas he had gone before by mistake, for she remembered some grassy fields on her former way towards it, fields among which she thought she might find just the sort of pool as he had in her mind. Yet she took care of her money still, she carried her basket. Death seemed still a long way off, and life was so strong in her. She craved food and rest as he hastened towards them at the very moment she was picturing to herself the bank from which she would leap towards death. It was already 5 days since as he had left Windsor, for as he had wandered about, always avoiding speech or questioning looks, and recovering her air of proud self-dependence, whenever she was under observation, choosing her decent lodging at night, undressing herself neatly in the morning, and setting off on her way steadily, or remaining under shelter if it rained, as if she had a happy life to cherish. And yet, even in her most self-conscious moments, the face was sadly different from that which had smiled at itself in the old spec glass, or smiled at others, when they glanced at it admiringly. A hard and even fierce look had come in the eyes, though their lashes were as long as ever, and they had all their dark brightness. And the cheek was never dimpled with smiles now. It was the same rounded, pouting, childish prettiness, but with all love and belief in love departed from it the sadder for its beauty, like that wondrous Medusa face, with the passionate, passionless lips. At last she was among the fields as he had been dreaming of, on the long narrow pathway leading towards a wood. If there should be a pool in that wood, it would be better hidden than one in the fields. No, it was not a wood, only a wild brake, where there had once been gravel pits, leaving mounds and hollows studded with brushwood and small trees. She roamed up and down, thinking there was perhaps a pool in every hollow, before she came to it, till her limbs were weary, and she sat down to rest. The afternoon was far advanced, and the leaden sky was darkening, as if the sun were setting behind it. After a little while Eddie started up again. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.